As the 2023 general elections approach, there is need for citizens to ask and question aspirants on their promises and make demands for what is necessary and to move the nation forward. My guest for this week, Mr. Akeem Abolade, opines that there is need for citizens to look out for leaders getting results. Enjoy. Such a pleasure, Mr. Akeem, to have you in this episode. I so much appreciate you creating time out of your busy schedule and the short notice. Thank you very much for coming on this episode. So let's start like this. 2023 is coming. A lot of politicking is coming. A lot of things are happening where you call crazy, especially with some utterances. For example, 2 days ago, we had the governor of Central Bank, Emefiele, come out to say Nigerians can have a heart attack. I'm having a lot of fun. We have some like presidential aspirants, Tinubu, coming out to say, I don't know where others are going. I'm running to the villa. A lot of politicking coming out. And just as 2 days ago, we had the ministers, some ministers resigning from their position after so much agitation on why we have people in the cabinet still vying for political appointees. So 2023 is coming. And a lot of questions about the leadership space, political space is concerned. Let me get your view first on what you think about the current political sphere in Nigeria and the current political Nigerian climate as it is now.
The current political situation of Nigeria is quite terrible. The political elites are more concerned about politicking, preparing for the next election, who's going to be the president and all that. And they have actually put aside their primary assignment, which is to ensure we have a peaceful and prospering nation. So the peace and prosperity has been pushed aside. So we're not dealing with politics. Which makes it difficult to have a sustainable country. So the politicians can say whatever they like just for them to win elections. And after elections, they start preparing for another election, and the cycle continues. So I personally don't think that's pretty much sustainable. So I think coming for 2023 elections, we would require a total overhaul of this system, whereby the only thing we talk about is election. So we don't get to talk about something else. We don't get to talk about what really affects every Nigerian. No, we don't get to talk about our security. We don't get to talk about healthcare. We don't get to talk about the education system currently is on strike. So we don't get to talk about key issues that affect every Nigerian. We don't get to talk about the poor status of our roads, the lack of electricity, and so on and so on and so on. So we don't get to talk about those issues. We and the politicians always have time for elections. I think it's sad if you're not talking about things that will move our country forward.
Talking about things that move nation forward, there have been so many outspokenness or so many agitations from Nigerian citizens about what should be working and what should be. And it's almost, even before now, right from 2020, from last year, people have always been vocal about things not right and things not going well. Why do you think we've not been able to make much progress?
I just highlighted some of the reasons. Being that right from the start to the stop of a political regime, we basically prepare talk about elections. We don't talk about things that move the country forward. So that is why it is difficult for us to move forward. All our energy is spent on elections. You know, we tend to push this armor of strength into APC, PDP, the Northern candidate, the Southern candidate, you know, we talk about all these things. These things don't change the situation of Nigeria. These things don't solve our problem. Whether we have a Muslim president, we have a Christian president, the president is APC or is PDP or is whatever and whatever, it doesn't change the fact that our problems don't get solved. rather get compounded and complicated. So we have far-reaching, deep-rooted problems that need urgent attention, and not just 2023 elections, and we drain our energy concerning that. I think we should discuss more about how we want to move this country forward. You know, if we keep on putting on our energy on elections, there's no way we can sit down, have reasonable discourse, use our energy and expertise on moving our nation forward.
But people have argued that it will take political will to drive change, which will mean that there has to be free and fair election that will see to the election of a competent leader. What's your reaction to that?
Yes, you know, to have competent leaders, we need that leader to be the people's choice, in quotes. The reason why I said in quotes is that even sometimes the people's choice may not be competent. We just say that with Buhari. Technically, Buhari was the people's choice. Even if he had had a very free and fair election, although election in Nigeria can hardly be free and fair, but even if the election was very free, very fair, Buhari still would have won the election. So I think he was the people's choice, but he was not the right candidate for the job. So that's why I said in quotes. So the idea of having a free and fair election does not guarantee, is a way to having a good candidate, but does not guarantee that you are going to have a good president or a good governor and so on and so forth. So the actual thing is to have a proper public orientation in what to look for.
Public orientation?
Yes, okay. What to look for in a good leader. You know, when people don't even know what to look for, you know, you can look at someone maybe based on their past records, or maybe based on their personality, or maybe based on their level of kindness and so on and so forth. So we need to orientate the masses on, okay, what are the things they should look for? Okay, these are the toolkits. A good leader must have this, and all must be standout attributes, you know. So those are the things that, you know, when people understand this, then we cannot start talking about free and fair election. When people understand what a good candidate should look like, then we cannot start talking about free and fair election. But we also need to look at what is happening in political parties. Because the political parties are the ones that present these candidates. For example, in APC now, APC has about 30 presidential aspirants. And I'm not an APC member, let alone being a delegate. Even if I'm an APC member, less than 0.1% of APC members will eventually become delegate that will vote for the president in the primary elections. So, even at that level, it is still people within the political parties, the key member in the political parties, that present candidates to us. So, unless we get this our so-called public orientation program, even to that level, whereby those in political parties that present eventual candidates also have this idea of what an ideal candidate should look like.
Before I was hoping to engage on orientation, before we go there, you made mention of political parties. As it is now, it almost looks like we don't have political parties with ideologies. Or is it that they have that we don't know? But because, for example, when we look at the two main parties currently, what do they stand for? When, by the time we look at it, do they really stand for anything? Is it that we are missing something? So when we talk of political parties itself, what should political parties look like?
Well, people always talk about political party being that they must stand for some certain ideologies, certain norms and abnorms and so on. I also don't believe in that. I don't believe that maybe the American system whereby we have Democrats and Republicans, some being far left, far right, mid left, and all that. I don't believe in such.
Okay.
I believe in.
Why is that though?
Yes, because when we have political parties that have fixed set of ideologies, it's bad for the country.
Okay.
Why? Because when they are in power, they tend to push those ideologies, and those ideologies may not be best fits for the society. For example, in the US now, they are debating abortion law because Democrats don't like abortion, and Democrats like abortion, the Republicans don't like it, and so on. Even though if abortion is generally a good thing for the country, because some people don't like it, or some people like it, so they tend to push. You know, it is not, the law is not being passed based on whether it is good or bad. It is being passed based on whether some politicians favor it or they don't favor it. And I basically think things like that are not the best. So I think politicians should work towards achieving goals that are best for their people, not based on some fixed ideology or their own personal belief. Sometimes your own personal belief, because I'm a Muslim, I have some personal opinion about certain things that may not be the generally acceptable. Even if they are generally acceptable, may not be the best for everyone. So maybe those things are not good enough for others. So I don't have to enforce it just because I believe in it. So I don't believe in politics of ideology. I believe in politics of improving people's life.
Politics of development.
Politics of development. Peace and prosperity. That's the kind of politics I believe in, whereby the country keeps on developing, people's lives keep on getting better and better. So I don't believe in some ideological kind of politics.
You made mention of orientation, and it made me remember this conversation I had with someone over the weekend, last weekend, and the person gave it a word, orientation deficiency. We live in an information age. Information is out there all around, but it looks like more and more that people, like you said, don't have the proper orientation. What brought about this low deficiency in orientation despite the level of information out in the world today?
Yes, I'm currently in the world. Information is everywhere. You check your phone, you receive information on almost every platform. And it's quite good that information is now everywhere and it's free. But public orientation is going down the drain.
Why is that?
And when you look at disparity between access to information and public orientation, you'd be surprised at why should this be? But the thing is, although information is flowing like water, what is the quality of that information? What are the sources? And what are the norms that those information are passing? If you go on TikTok now, TikTok is the most watched, most stayed on social media platform. People spend more time on TikTok than any other social media platform. And they watch more videos and more, technically people get more information on TikTok than anywhere else. And when you look at it, I have it on my phone, when you watch TikTok, basically most of the things you watch on TikTok are vulgar. You know, things that doesn't show a sense of responsibility, things that doesn't depict a responsible human being. So if these are the things that people are producing, people are projecting, it shows that these are the things that we are assuming to be norms. So we are assuming irresponsibility, vulgarity to be the norm in our society. So some of those things are making people to have proper orientation. So the idea of this, how things should look like, is now how things shouldn't look like. For example, now, you know, those days we talk about, you know, you go to school, you get a good job, and you know, you start a business and all that. So you see, we're now talking about, well, you Ali go to school, Ali on my way, and Ali becomes a foster, and Ali made money, and Ali is now balling, things like that. And people talk about going to club, playing Dorime, and all that. So, and everyone also wants to be like that. So basically, what I'm trying to drive on is that we are already assuming the bad things to be the normal thing, which is weakening our, how would I call it? Our
sense of responsibility.
Sense of responsibility. It's weakening it. And all that make it difficult for us to have a very responsible and balanced society. So we have the younger ones, well, I'm still young anyways, people in their 20s, and those that are still teenagers, having access to information that are not fair enough. So they have this idea that, okay, if you want to be successful, is that you're a corrupt politician, or you're a fraudster, or even if you are doing business, you are pretty much not quite honest with the business and all that. So there is this general opinion that if you are honest, if you are straightforward, you can be successful. And so people are getting some of those things into their senses, and they are believing that, well, maybe being honest and being straightforward, having integrity is not the best attribute of a man. So some of those things are their weakness.
So talking about national consciousness now, it's obvious that Nigeria is at a critical point where Nigerians need to be abreast of information. For example, we made mention of how people need to know the kind of leaders they need to choose, which means that there's need for information as far as coming to an awareness of national responsibility, which means I have the responsibility to know the kind of leaders I need to elect to direct the nation in a way that will eventually favor me. So, two questions. Now that you made mention of the quality or and source of the information, who should we rely on to give us this information to help citizens understand their responsibility in all of this? And what kind of information should we be disseminating in this political year? Because it's critical for Nigerians at this point, looking at everything that we need to do and seeing how much of change we need at this time.
Well, looking at our current situation, it's quite clear that we just need to get it right at the coming polls. And with the trends of everybody wanting to become the president, it's quite difficult to discern the candidates one after another.
Okay.
And eventually, what is going to happen is that the president will either come from APC or PDP. So, but now when we start telling people that they should look for this and they should look for that, it's technically not their responsibility now, I mean the general populace, because they still have to vote for who these political parties present. So until then, we can't say this is what we should look forward to. Personally, I would suggest a situation whereby people do their own organic research. You see, when they say someone is a presidential candidate, you can just go to Google, check those people's profile, check them on LinkedIn, check them on their company, check them on their company website, get all kind of information you can get about them and access them. Check their track record of excellence. Because despite the fact that we are corrupt as a country, corruption is our problem, one much more serious problem we have in Nigeria, aside corruption, people always talk about corruption being our number one, but that's not our number one problem. Our number one problem is that we don't appreciate excellence. You see, if someone is maybe the governor of Central Bank and the person is kind of corrupt, but to some extent, the person is still giving results, still gets results. You know, it's still better than someone that is corrupt and is not even getting any results. It shows that getting results comes even before looking at whether someone is corrupt or not. So what we actually lack is, you know, this sense of excellence has gone. We don't appreciate excellence. When you analyze people, we don't analyze them from the point of excellence. Critical figures. For example, if someone has been a minister, you know, many of these presidential aspirants, whether they are ministers, governors, senators, and all that. When they say someone, okay, was a minister between so-so year and so-year, when you look at that ministry and the aspect of the Nigerian society that it controls, you look at what are the improvements. If someone is a minister of health, you look at key figures. When that person was a minister of health, was there a reduction in infant mortality? Was there a reduction in all kind of diseases, maybe the prevalence of tuberculosis, of HIV? You know, the key metrics, maybe when it was during a pandemic, maybe the pandemic was well managed, then you look at the performance of the public hospitals that were under that minister, maybe the federal medical centers or the federal teaching hospitals. You know, you look at those individual institutions under the person's ministry, and you look at how well those institutions have performed. Then you look at innovative ideas, maybe public policies, frameworks that came under that person. So that's the key things to show that whether that person is someone of excellence or not. So if you look at someone that has been a minister and you really can't point any major breakthroughs while the person was a minister. It shows that there are no two ways to it. That person is not an excellent person. That person does not appreciate excellence. So if he becomes president, most likely wouldn't get any results.
Mm.
So like similarly, if someone was a governor, the governor of Oyo State, you look at what are the key metrics. Okay, when this person was a governor, was there an improvement in education? Was there improvement in healthcare? Was there improvement in infrastructure? I mean, an holistic approach. Because basically, when people are analyzing some of these data, they just look at one or two metrics. We build one road between this place and this place. You know, you're the governor, you're not supposed to build road. No, building road is good, but not roads alone. What about other things? No, you build road, okay, you build major roads. What about inner roads? Roads that lead into people's areas. What about healthcare? What about education? What about agriculture? What about other key sectors of the economy? So those are the things that one we look at, not just saying this or that. So we look at key metrics and we look at excellent performance in those areas. So if you see someone like that, you don't even have to care whether that person is corrupt or not. When you look at those and you can see blue ticks, okay, when this person was a governor, that was a massive improvement in education, the passing rate of WAEC, or you look at number of out of school children before he became the governor, when he left, a number of students from that school state are able to gain admission to top universities, and you know, some of these key metrics. And those are the things that we should look at. You know, we can sit down for a whole day to just analyze that person, and you find out whether this person actually performed well, not the media brouhaha that we see. You know, the media
PR, public relations.
The PR. You know, they can say Peter Obi or who else is a former governor, or maybe Amosun.
Yeah.
And all these people that we
fire me.
Or fire me. But when once you just sit down, you know, analyze them, go to Google, check key metrics why they were there and see whether there was significant improvement.
So, looking at where we are now, and looking at where we should be, what are the kind of metrics Nigerians should be using to analyze these people? Because it will also take a sort of a level of information, because I believe it takes a level of kind of information to actually say you want to use a kind of metrics to analyze someone. So looking at where we are now to where we think we should be, what kind of metrics should Nigerians be using to analyze some of these aspirants that are coming?
I think there are no kind of metrics. We just have to look at metrics that are holistic.
Such as?
You know, when people are analyzing Buhari admission, they may say you build infrastructure. Quite well, you build some railway networks that ordinarily, things like that take donkey years to build in it, and we're able to build it in 4 or 5 years, which is good. But not that alone. You understand? When you're analyzing, but you don't use that alone. You look at other things. What about security? What about status of the economy? What about other infrastructure that are not railways? What about education? You look at, we highlight the metrics. Then we'll be giving, okay.
Sorry, I would like you to highlight those metrics so that people can have an understanding of, because as it is now, with this amount of aspirant that we have, it may look confusing, but when people have the list, okay, this metrics, what did it do? So if you can help us
on a scale of 1 to 5, because 1 to 10 is may look too confused. On a scale of 1 to 10, we can look at, okay, the core metrics, the number one metric in analyzing any leader,
okay,
is the performance of the economy.
Performance of the economy.
In looking at economic performance, I mean, that's a very broad term. So we look at in economic performance, we look at key metrics. In economic performance, there are 3 key metrics. Number one is economic growth, that's GDP growth. Number 2 is unemployment rate, and number 3 is inflation rate. So those 3 key metrics are things that are sacrosanct. So we must check that to see whether an economy is performing well or not. Unemployment, inflation, and GDP growth. So if an aspirant score low in that, you know, like when you're analyzing Buhari now, you say, okay, when Buhari was there, you know, if these 3 figures actually score, it means Buhari hasn't done quite well. But if someone is a CBN governor, the CBN governor is also in charge of as key input
figures
as well. So if you're analyzing a CBN governor, you also have to use that. Then you can go to education too. So in education, we can look at a lot of indices. Number one, we can look at Nature Index. Nature Index shows the quality of research that is done in the country for that year. We can look at university rankings. Maybe you look at top rankings like Key West or Shanghai ranking and the likes. You see whether, okay, maybe the university are improving while this person is there. We can look at, realizing the person there now. So using out of school children, they're not.
At least as far as out of school children is concerned, it has been recorded that we have 15 million, about 15 million out of school
children. So those are some of the things, in education, we look at that. Then in healthcare, we look at prevalence of key diseases, tuberculosis, HIV and AIDS, other key diseases. You can look at prevalence of and survival rate of cancer. Those statistics are pretty much easy to find. You can look at how often people are getting cancer and how better they are, whether they are getting treated or not. So we look at the survival rate of cancer. It's also a key figure to show whether our healthcare system is performing. We look at the prevalence of key things like congestive heart failure and the survival rates. That shows whether our healthcare is effective or not. When we look at those key chronic infections and also non-infectious diseases, and we look at the rate that people are getting those diseases and the survival rates of those that already have it, we can use those things to show whether our healthcare system is actually performing well. So if there are improvement, then we know that, okay, the healthcare system is improving, and that's for healthcare. Then we look at infrastructure. Transport infrastructure. So we look at transport infrastructure. We can look at active mileage of railway, and whether we have 1,200 kilometers of active railway lines, not just the ones that are not usable. And we also look at ports. We look at the level of delivery. If you have a product getting to the port today, how long will it take that product to leave the port? And those are the key metrics to use. We look at our road network. We observe whether the roads are getting better or worse. And we can look at, you cannot look for all the roads, but for at least the roads that the federal roads that we use more often in our area, we can use that. And so on. So those are the key metrics for transportation. Then we also look at electricity. So for our area, we can look at the number of hours we have electricity for. We have power for 8 hours a day. If it has increased to 15 hours, then there's an improvement. If it has decreased, then nothing to say.
So from there,
answers begin to speak for themselves. So we get to be able to do a much more rational and honest analysis rather than the media analysis. Because media analysis is just based on emotion and rage. So we look at security. We look at the number of people that are dying as a result of insurgency and banditry. We look at whether those figures are going up
or they're coming down.
We look at number of kidnapping cases, number of robbery attacks. Some of those statistics are actually available. So those are the key things we look at to assess whether. So if someone is a governor of a state, if you analyze those figures for that state, and the person is calling red. Now, that person will not make a good president. There is no way you can make a good president. Actually, it doesn't appreciate excellence as a governor. If I'm given a smaller responsibility and I can't perform well, so how do you expect me to perform well if I'm given a much larger responsibility? So if someone is a minister and those figures are pointing red, so how? That person won't make a good president. So those are the key figures to look at. That will show whether this person is a son of excellence or is just someone.
So as to drive this home, leadership, competence. So what should define Nigeria's leadership? And secondly, what would a competent leader look like in Nigeria?
But a competent leader is a leader that is able to deliver results. We've highlighted our problems.
Yes.
You understand? So our universities are poorly run. A competent leader is a leader that is able to ensure that our universities are better run. You just start seeing improvement. Like what happened in Egypt. Egyptian universities are getting better just over the past 5 years. You look at key figures. A competent leader is able to improve security. Should look forward to that. Okay, is this leader going to improve security? That's key. Aside economic figures, security comes next. if a leader is not able to guarantee security, in fact, that person is not. If someone is a governor of a state and you can't guarantee security in that state, if that person is going to be president for years, it's going to be worse. You understand? So those are some of the, you know, for states, we may not be able to do analysis such as
probably unemployment.
Unemployment, you know, some NBS do it, but don't want to trust that figure so much. But for things like unemployment, you may not be able to really say things like inflation rate, you may not be able to disaggregate inflation rate to state level and things like that. But for state, of course, we can look at the security situation of the state. Then we can, of course, things like education, we can see, healthcare, we can see. It's like healthcare, education, the transport infrastructure, we can see some of those things. So a competent leader is a leader that is able to get results, improve all these key sectors.
Mm. Like I asked first, so how should we be defining leadership currently? Because it almost feels like we can't use the definition of a certain society to define our own kind of leadership. Or leadership in its entirety, is it a general idea or is it based on society? But basically, how do we define leadership? How should we define leadership?
Well, leadership in Nigeria currently doesn't even have a specific definition.
Mm.
Depends on what individual believe in. But my own opinion of a good leader or leadership is that leadership must be able to improve situation. If our leadership is not improving us, then we don't have leadership. So if you have a leader must be able to improve things.
Mm.
If you make something at point A, you must be able to get that point B, which is a better scenario. So that's what I define a good leadership as. So whatever kind of leadership you want to talk about, so whatever kind of leader we are referring to, the first thing remains that a good leader must be able to improve things.
Mm.
So any leader that is able to improve things is a good leader. Mm. And the reason why I don't really rate any of our leaders, I can't even think of any. Currently, maybe if I lower my standard a bit, I'm able to pick one or two. But for now, based on my own standard, I can't think of any. Because the first thing a good minister should have is a well-functioning department of statistics. Because it's statistics that will allow you to determine whether you're improving or improving. And when you look at all these states' governors, they don't do any statistics.
And it almost looks like a Nigerian problem with data. We don't seem to have statistics.
I kind of think it's intentional, you know? Hmm. I mean, this video just wants to measure stats so that it doesn't seem we don't have a proven analysis of whether things are degenerating. You know, we can say that things are degenerating based on maybe the media reports and all that, so maybe our own view. But we really can't say things are. But no, those things are kind of subjective, unless there is a statistical backup. If there is a statistic to back up something, then everyone will see it clearly, no argument. But if there is no statistics, then nobody can actually say that, well, this thing has improved or this thing has improved. So that's what they do. But they don't want us to see that, well, during their reign, things have gotten worse. So if there is no stats, it will be subjective.
Mm, yeah,
it will be objective. It will say, because it's an opponent. Or But if there is a statistic to say that, well, actually in your state, there's been an increase in the number of out of school children. Some of those studies actually are available, especially those that are made by United Nations and all that. But those are the key things like GDP growth are supposed to be measured at state level. In most countries, GDP figures are measured at state level. Unemployment figures are measured at state level. Inflation rates are measured at state level. And some other economic figures that you can see. In China, they measure number of road mileage, number of grain production per local government, not even per state.
Mm.
Although they don't call it local government, they call it counties.
Mm.
Per county, they measure number of grain outputs.
Mm.
Whether rice production has increased or has decreased, whether cassava production has increased or decreased, every single aspect is measured.
Mm.
And because their own leadership system is performance-based, that's why they're improving. Mm. They designed their leadership system to be in such a way that it is purely performance-based. So you can't be the president in a country like China because people like you. It is because you are competent. It's because they've assessed your performance over the years and they know that you are fit enough. Not because you have money to win election, because you are popular, just like Buhari was popular and all that. It's in a country that you don't win election based on such.
Mm.
Of course, they don't even do election anyways. Mm-hmm. But people are put in certain positions based on their competence, based on their past records of excellence. So if they see that maybe this someone, and most of that's generally start from local level, maybe as village heads, like councillors in Nigeria, and they start to track their performance because performance are measured at that level. So even as a councillor in your village, they can measure all the key statistics. They will see whether there are improvements or there are no improvements. And if they see that there are massive, huge improvements, they promote that person to become pretty much like a county head or a local government chairman in the case of Nigeria, then to the head of a city, like a city mayor, then to the governor level, then to, or they call it provinces in China, to the provincial level, and to the federal level, maybe as a premier or as vice president, then to president and all that. So it's how would I call it? It's a bottom-top approach.
Mm. From top to bottom.
You know, in Nigeria, it's top to bottom.
From top to bottom.
So it's sort of a bottom-top system,
mm,
whereby, you know, people move across based on excellence. Just like you have in companies too. You know, in a company, people usually start as graduate training. Then when they are very good, they promote them, they promote them, they become the CEO,
mm,
of the company. So you cannot just join the committee and say you want to become the CEO of that company. That's not going to be possible. So in China, that's basically what they do. That's why you can be from Fujian. Fujian is a province in China, it's a coastal province. You can send that person to go and become the governor of Shandong, another province. They can just move it. They can move someone from, they don't care whether you are from that province, they don't care. They just want to get results. In fact, many times in China, when there is a province that is not performing well, maybe the province is not, it's just lagging behind, you know, lagging behind others. And they want that province to improve, like a state. They want to bring a highly performing governor from that, from another state, to come and head that state, and see whether he can get results. You know, just like in banks, when a branch is not performing, they can go and bring a high performing branch manager elsewhere to go and see whether there can be improvements in that branch. Basically, that's what they do there. Just to see that every state is catching up. But in Nigeria, I know it's not like that. Although we don't have that kind of system, and we surely won't have it. So, but even with our own system, we can still design it in such a way that it appreciates more of excellence than ability to win elections. Yes.
I like that. Getting results over ability to win elections. So I think for me that's key. The ability to see someone getting results over ability to win election. Because someone was giving an analysis, and I love that illustration. He said, most of the time what we do in Nigeria is to say, this car has broken down, who should fix it? Then we go say, Sarumi is popular. But Sarumi is not a mechanic. Meanwhile, you need a mechanic to fix the car. But you say, okay, Sarumi is popular. Then you go and get Sarumi because he's popular. And then he gets there, he can't do anything. So I think that for me makes sense. Lastly, I wish to use this to round up, back to the citizens, because I believe it is time that citizens have to take responsibility for themselves in ensuring that Nigeria moves ahead. Over time, people have looked up to the center, whereas we can start looking within ourselves too. So how should, in terms of building national consciousness too, in relation to that, and building proper orientation, how can Nigerians mobilize, or how can they position themselves in a way that aspirants will take them seriously and demands can be made and met?
Well, when you look at Nigeria, we put pressure more on the center than even people that are closer to us. Like someone used to say, that there is no governor in this current regime that is even performing as good as Buhari, that we all think is the worst. That's all these governors, none of them is even performing up to Buhari. But we don't get to talk about them. All these governors, they don't even, their performance is very low. It's because we've held them at very low standard. our expectation about this government is very good. Whereas they are the ones that their decisions affect us more than the president. The president probably doesn't know my area exists. If I live at Kute, that they have a very terrible road, and there's a state road that runs across that area. You know, Buhari probably doesn't know Kute exists, but the government of Sim knows Kute exists, most likely. Most likely he knows that area exists. So, you know, if I'm on a background, the next thing I'm thinking about is Buhari, then I'm wrong. I should think about the government of the state to fix it. We don't put pressure on the governors. We don't. We always believe that it's not getting clinical. We always find excuses for them. If there is an insecurity crisis in the state, the first person responsible is the governor of that state.
But then they've argued that, as it is now, the governor is just the CSO of the state on paper. It's not a reality. And it's going by what happened with Sanwo-Olu. I think last year when he visited Magodo Estate and a whole police had to tell him to stop.
No, the police didn't tell him to stop. The officer said that he's there on the instruction of the IG and the Attorney General. And the police officer was right. Sanwo-Olu was wrong, actually.
Compared to the governor of a state who have been told that he's the chief security officer of a state.
No, but Sanwo-Olu was wrong. He was wrong. That was a Supreme Court judgment. As a governor, you don't intrude, you don't arbitrate. A Supreme Court judgment. If it had to be in the US, Sanwo-Olu would be in jail by now. You're arbitrating Supreme Court judgment. He's not supposed to go there at all. He's not. And even if there is a crisis in your state and maybe you have to go there just to maintain peace, you don't have to go there and now start making a scene as if you are some kind of a hero. That's what Nigerian politicians do, and that's wrong. You understand? So that was a court judgment that stated that those guys should vacate. Although I don't know the full story, but what I know, based on what I read, was that it's actually a Supreme Court judgment that asked those guys to vacate. And the police officers there were just to ensure that the order was abided to. So I think someone was wrong. And we can't actually use that to judge. The governor of the state is in charge of the police in that state.
But this past few months, it has proven to be wrong.
Is it?
That was in charge of the police.
Not. The governor is saying
because the police have to get order from the IGP.
Police don't get orders from IGP. That's some of the wrong assumptions we have. Police don't get orders from IGP. Over 90% of police inquiries are state inquiries. Any criminal situation in a state is a state case. It's not a federal case. If police arrest someone is a thief, is a kidnapper, is an armed robber, is a state case, which shows that it's under the purview of the state. You understand what I'm trying to say now? So reducing crime in a particular state is the responsibility of the state governor to ensure that. One of the reasons why we have crimes rolling everywhere is because there is no justice. We have poor justice system. So some of these governors would say, even the criminals that are caught by the police, let's say even say our police system is weak, but even the few criminals that are being caught by the police, how would I say it? Do these governors actually ensure that these criminals are punished eventually? Do they ensure that justice is being served? How often do governors go to prisons and see the criminals there and assess their cases? Over 90% of these cases are state cases handled by the state government. Do we have competent attorney generals at the state level that ensure that cases are followed to the letters? Any criminal court is being brought to justice? Some of these things are their responsibility. They just feel like, well, it's not, you can see it's not my fault. It's a very good strategy. You know, if I'm supposed to do something and I can, it's not my fault. So you can see my guy is the one that's supposed to be in charge. You see, this is just a way of, you know, pulling it, how would I call it? Being irresponsible. It's just a way of being irresponsible. Most of these governments are irresponsible. If you are the one in charge of criminal inquiries in your state, you have your attorney general that is in charge. You are the one that appoints the attorney general. You are supposed to be in charge. The police command in a state is in the hand of the governor. It's not in the hand of the IG. If there is a criminal, the IG cannot say that criminal must not be charged. It's not possible. If there is a criminal in a state, the criminal must be charged.
So, what would be your message to Nigerians as we draw closer to 2023 general elections, most especially with a lot of drama in the political sphere right now?
Well, I would advise Nigerians to be more rational, to be less emotional. They should show less rage, and they should be more critical. They should show critical. Yes. They should critique their leaders rationally. Critique them rationally. And they should look at all the sphere of government. They should look at the lawmakers, they should look at their governors, they should even look at their governor. They should be more concerned about who is even their governor than who is the president. People are always more concerned about who is the president, but they should even be more concerned about who is their governor. Whether it's someone that would ensure that there is peace and security in the states, or whether it's someone that would be blaming the president or the federal government. They should look at that. Whether it is someone that will ensure that the number of out-of-school children in that state is reduced, or whether it's someone that will be blaming someone else for it, or whether it is someone that will ensure that there is adequate healthcare provision in that state, or whether it is someone that will ensure that there is improvement in the economy of the state, or someone that will be blaming government policies. So those are some of the things that we need to. Or whether it's someone that would establish a statistics agency and ensure statistics are published in the state. That's the first thing to ask. You want to be the governor of our state, are you going to be publishing genuine statistics, real facts? Are you going to be showing us statistics of where we are and where we were and where we are? Just like our vice president, are you going to be showing us statistics of where we were and where we are? You know, so we need people like that. We need people that will be honest and that will show excellence, that will show quality attributes of a good leader. You know, not some political vagabonds like we currently have. You know, most of them are just political vagabonds.
Mr. Akim, such a pleasure listening to you. I so much appreciate your submissions and opinions. Thank you for joining in on this episode. I really appreciate. I'm hoping that everyone and anyone listening to this will take something or two, especially the part of delivering results over just being politically popular and all that. Thank you very much.
Thank you for joining in again this week, and I hope you had a good time. Please ensure to subscribe to this channel from wherever you listen to podcasts. Special thanks to my sound engineer, Tom Lucky Media. Till I come your way next time, stay lifted.